Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome everyone to Hidden Growth Champions, our podcast series. In this fourth season, and today in our virtual studio, I've got Dennis Ackermann. Dennis, you've had an illustrious career, first in Europe, then you found yourself in Southeast Asia, where you're based today and running a fascinating business. We're going to talk about leadership. We're going to talk about digital transformation and everything in between. Thank you for making time for this conversation and welcome to our virtual studio. Please tell our audiences a bit about yourself.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here today. My name is Dennis Ackermann. I'm originally from Netherlands, based in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. I'm the founder and director of Orbis Business School, and we specialize in transformational leadership. We believe that transformation is the essential skill of the current times. The ability to adapt to the ever-changing circumstances, being the big topics, COVID, the global supply chain shakeup, sustainable transformations, etc. It all necessitates a continuous change. And that all starts with the mindset from the leaders and subsequently the organizational change that comes with it.
100%. Dennis, I mean, we've been talking about leadership for decades now. But in the last, I guess, decade and certainly since the onset of COVID and the recovery since, the words digital transformation have come to the fore. When we speak about leadership these days, in many conversations, we find that we speak about the business challenge first. We speak about, I suspect, having a foundation of transformational leadership in place, or at least a recognition of it. We speak very often about the business challenge. So maybe talk to us a little bit from what you've seen as, what are the kind of challenges for which transformational leadership is needed these days?
Yeah, that's a great question. What we see is that, well, first of all, what is our understanding of digital transformation? What is it all about? And what we saw during COVID was, of course, we had to act quickly. We had to adapt to a new reality, which meant that we couldn't go into the same location any longer. And we needed to start to work from home, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we rushed to implement technical solutions to enable that. Now, Zoom and those platforms mushroomed during that time. And others think about digital transformation as, we need to go online in terms of a web shop or something e-commerce related. And yes, these are essential elements. But for me, these are enablers of something we want to achieve in the business. And that's something that is, crucially speaking, is overlooked too many times. So digital transformation starts for me with strategy, and digital is an enabler to something you want to achieve with your business. So instead of doing it bottom up from a technology point of view, we need to start with the business side of transformation first and foremost. So that is what I see. And there was some research that I think it was from McKinsey that more than 70% of digital transformations actually fail for the reason of not having a clear strategy. And usually bottom-up initiatives fail to scale to anything meaningful or achieve a return on the investment. So that is quite significant. That is something that needs to be addressed on the leadership level.
Now, I certainly want to delve much more into digital transformation and in the myriad of ways in which it is shaping the leadership agenda, as well as focusing us on the kind of leadership skills that are needed. But just before I go there, you said something really interesting. You spoke about digital transformation starting with strategy. And you know, in the world of strategy, one of the words that certainly come to the fore in our work with clients, and certainly in the last couple of years, is this word called ambition. This word very often associated with a sense of purpose, a sense of bigger impact we want to make in the world, and for which a new strategy is required. And yes, in 9 out of 10 cases, digital transformation then plays a big role. And when I think about these words, it very often brings me back to leadership, because where does our sense of purpose come from? You know, where does our kind of innate sense that we are developing an ambition for something, you know, where does that emerge from? And I'd love your thoughts about this and your interactions with leaders. Do you get a sense of when they come and speak to you, when they decide to enroll in the business school, when they're having kind of rich conversations with their peers on your programs, Where does that sense come from? They may be convinced already that digital transformation is an important element of, or they may be frustrated at the pace that it's going. But in terms of what you would call strategy, in terms of their bigger ambition, where do you think these things come from? What are they sharing with you?
Yeah, that is indeed a great one. It starts with vision and purpose, indeed. And if you look at small entrepreneurs, at the passion of the founder, that is quite clear. Often they had a vision, start out something, and then the money came in if you're successful, or if you're not successful in the first 1 to 3 years, they go bust. All right, now that is something we typically see on the startup side. Whereas on the corporate side, there's this tendency that what brought us here and we've been tremendously successful is actually your biggest barrier for growth and daring to reinvent yourself, start with a blank page and not having an incremental strategy, as so many big companies have done. That's scary. Changes in the top leadership is, of course, another one. What was the original purpose of a company? By turnover in the board level, that can also dilute or change over time. Well, I'm not saying that original vision has to be static forever, but what we see is in the maturity stage of an established larger company, and there's little room or little discussion or really little risk appetite to radically change that. And digital is just one way to innovate, but there are, of course, a myriad other ones. And it's all about, I think, short-term accountability to the owners, shareholders, versus the long-term and the risk associated with bold new ideas.
Dennis, if that's kind of our departure point, let's talk a little bit about the kind of transformation that these leaders experience. And I wanted to start off with the digital transformation aspects, and maybe we can talk about other aspects that emerge as part of it. Sometimes, you know, we find that they discover in the process that it's not just about digital, but very often digital transformation does get kind of put on the map, on the roadmap, in their strategy. It gets discussed often. And there was one conversation I remember very distinctly recently I've had with one of our associates, with Ayman Asaf, who was the CIO in BP. And he said, digital transformation has been with us for decades. We've always been in digital transformation since the invention of the computer. And that kind of got me to think about, you know, what is different about the current wave? If we are transforming digitally or towards a digital future for decades now, perhaps for some that was less visible, perhaps for some it was not on their radar screen. It was for the IT guys to sort out first, and now it's in all of our faces. What do you think is different about the current wave of digitization?
Yeah, that's indeed a great one. Well, let's draw a parallel with the manufacturing. And I would say the automotive industry is a prime example here. There's a highly automated process. And you see that in order to manufacture a car in mass production environment, that's really high tech, high automated environment. And you need fewer people with a much higher skill level compared to doing everything manually by manual labor. So that is from a manufacturing point of view. Now, the office side has been pretty manual for a number of decades, ever since the invention of mainframe computer by IBM in the 1960s. In banks, basically your bank account is a number anyway. It's digital right from the start. So you deliver a digital product as a bank. Yeah. But if you look at other industries, the computer came as a personal computer, and it was more of a tool to get very operational things done in a quicker way. And then came the internet, where we could also interact better with each other. Started with the email, and then we also start to do the sales with e-commerce. But now with the advancement of AI, where we actually make the computing power even smarter by self-learning capabilities, then we are talking about a complete new ball game. It's not the human who is driving the interaction with a machine anymore, but the machine itself has a learning and an execution capability that goes beyond the individual human capability and brain processes. So that is, I think, that's really a revolutionary technology that we're looking at, which was simply not possible because of the lack of computing power a few decades ago. So that is, I think, what we see now. And of course, the big hype is now ChatGPT, which is far from a major product at the moment, but that is definitely the one of the first breakthrough AIs that people now know of, whereas we've been using AI for quite a while. This is a game changer. In the next 5 years or so, we will see a big adoption of these kind of technologies.
So interesting to watch the addition or the launch of the announcement, rather, of open APIs for ChatGPT. It's going to be really, really interesting to see how many new applications for it are going to come up and where its use is going to kind of pervade into existing systems and platforms. If I think for a moment, Dennis, about the role of leadership in the kind of digital transformation you've just described, where we're moving from very much kind of a user-driven or triggered learning into machine-triggered learning, if we move to a world where kind of the lines get blurred between what the user does and what the machine does, and our ability to kind of to amplify our work through that. What do you see as some of the new roles that leaders are asked to or are called on to fill in this changing environment?
Yeah, I see two factors here. That one is the way we do business or even reinventing business models altogether. And that is what I just mentioned before, is reinventing yourself entirely. The famous examples are Kodak and Nokia that failed to anticipate that. So where are we heading towards? How can we do business differently using digital? That is much more on, let's say, the strategy side. The other side is, of course, the people elements and the culture elements. So the culture of innovation, but also leaders become managers of both people and machines. And that is a shift in thinking where some people find themselves maybe less people and more machine computing power to run their department or even the entire business. Well, that's a fundamental change in leadership styles, is that you basically integrate a robot as a team member, so to speak. That sounds, we're not talking about these human-like robots that sit behind a desk. Of course, this is typically software cloud-based technologies. But what I see is, for instance, in technologies like RPA, robot process automation, it is usually approached as a project. So it's set and forget. We train this robot once. It can do some mundane tasks in a very efficient way. That's great. But then in the day-to-day management of your department, there might be new tasks that can be automated, done by robots. So not only the technology is becoming more and more advanced, but also we need to spot new opportunities to do things smarter, to use it to our own advantage, to upskill our people, to deal with the anxieties that people have right now. Will my job still exist in 2 years from now, or will it be replaced by a robot? That is, of course, another people factor that we need to address. So it creates a lot. There's a couple of predictions there that there will be a lot of new jobs that we don't know of yet in the next 10 years, and there will be a lot of jobs being placed by automation. But the overall consensus is that the labor market overall will not shrink. So in that sense, the fear of employees losing their jobs is primarily focused, I think, on upskilling rather than redundancy.
It's interesting, you know, Dennis, when I think about the kind of the first forays into leadership development in a world where digital transformation is almost given, it's often been about the introduction of technology. What does technology mean? We went on tours into technology centers. We spoke to companies who were seemingly digitizing before us. The technology itself became something that we needed to learn and understand and make sense of and certainly become much better aware of, almost irrespective of what leadership position you held. But the kind of things that you speak about now are much more about human-centered leadership. They're much more about helping people adjust into a very different work environment. And I guess in a way, what we started during COVID times, which is help people adjust, help people make sense of and be able to contribute and socialize and connect in a different work environment is just continuing. So perhaps talk to us a little bit about kind of the human-centered elements of leadership that has always been there, but from everything you're describing are even more important today than the technical parts, than understanding the technology per se.
Yes, that's indeed. Well, technology is, I think, from a conceptual and a business level, still relevant for leadership at all levels. So C-level should, they don't have to become data scientists, obviously. But what can digital do for your business on that level? To ask that yourself that question and answer it, that is, of course, still relevant. Which platform we use, which technology partner you choose is then, of course, much more into the execution. But indeed, the people side of things is a couple of things. The digital mindset, that as I define it, three elements. The first one is continuous change or continuous innovation mindset. And if you give you one example, the number of changes that one of my previous employer did in their back office ERP system was once per quarter. Yeah, they made these business process updates once per quarter. And comparably, Amazon is doing a change every 7 seconds. There's, of course, a high level of automation involved. There's not, but every 7 seconds, that is the speed of change that we're looking at. And how do you organize yourself towards that continuous innovation, iterative approach? That is an important one that leaders need to work on in their organization, where there's an end-to-end approach. So one challenge of big corporates is there are silos and departments based organized around functions and specializations of people, typically. That's the most common organization model that we see, the functional organization. And this type of innovation that requires this, where we do all this in an iterative and automated approach, and an also highly customer-oriented approach, we need to cut through all these silos. It becomes much more multidisciplinary, focusing on incremental improvements and value for a customer. So that is one thing. So how do we implement that? And our organizational structure is usually not suitable to have this speed of change, so to leverage on these digital opportunities that we have. The second one is the data mindset. And that is often companies rely on the technology department dealing with data. Well, they are responsible to provide data, but the ownership of the data, or actually rather, I would say information, because information is what drives value. Data itself is rather, has no business value unless you turn it into something meaningful, like information or any process. So that data mindset should be there, not only within the own department, if you talk about head of departments, but what are the synergies between different departments? So we sit on a pile of financial data. The marketing department sits on a pile of customer data. So how can we bring that together? Now, that's the overhype word, big data. Big data is essentially all the data that you can avail of combined. But then one step further is looking beyond your own company. I believe strongly that we will see more digital ecosystems. And that means we have data as an asset, which other parties can make use of our data. Of course, within the legal frameworks and data privacy and all that things, let's leave that aside for now. But I think we are all sitting on valuable data that if we combine efforts with other organizations within the supply chain or even non-related, there's a lot of opportunities there that can be achieved well. So that's the data mindset that, yeah, it goes beyond your own company. The last one is then the customer mindset, where we really need to go end to end. So that means that technology departments, who typically are a bit customer shy, if you like, that see often in organizations, we need to be much closer to the customer and using automation actually also to learn from a customer. And that's also often looked. All the interactions our customers make with our digital platforms is valuable input for marketing. So how long did they stay on a certain website? They click here, they click there. All of these things we can measure and we can learn from that. And in Amazon, to use them again as an example, they automatically learn from user behavior and optimize their website accordingly. So if a button moves 5 positions to the left and is slightly darker in color, they present that option to 100,000 customers. Compare that with the original layout for the other 100,000 customers, the one that sells more will automatically win. So it's a feedback loop between the business and the customer and optimizes automatically. That is quite an advanced way of doing market research. It's a kind of continuous process of doing market research.
Yes.
So these are the three elements I would definitely look into that leaders need to have, and also need to ensure that all the employees within their teams have this. So that is the data mindset, the continuous innovation mindset, and the end-to-end customer mindset.
No, this is great. Dennis, as I listen to this, it also occurs to me that as leaders, you know, our reliance on data is increasing. In all of these three mindsets, or within those three mindsets, data is invaluable. We search for it, we organize it, we provide access to it, we enable tools that help us to make sense of it, and ultimately we connect with customers and others in the ecosystem, and I'll come back to the ecosystem in a moment, in order to derive value from it. It also occurred to me as you were speaking that there's an element here of not just of data, but also of imagination, of being able to see opportunities that others don't, being able to envision what others can't see, or perhaps are afraid of, or perhaps find threatening for their organizations and the silos within which they operate. So there's a very interesting mix here of different leadership skills that we'll need to assume or learn as part of being able to effectively lead the digital transformation. And the data element is an important part of it, but certainly it's not the only one. And some of the creative and imaginative aspects that kind of overlay this, or that can be paired up with solid understanding of the data, is going to be important here.
Yes, digital transformation is an art and a science. And like social media marketing, you cannot plan for viral campaigns. That's also an art. So even though the science part is very important to analyze data, however you really need to, is the left brain, right brain, this question basically, right? But the creative part from the marketing point of view, it becomes even more and more important in terms of, if you look at the more and more automation, there also the in terms of the job roles and skills, the creative part, the visionary part, those things will not be replaced by machines anytime soon. So there's much more opportunity in that space than that cannot be replaced by the robots in the near future. So that's a good point that you mentioned here. And another one is, of course, also this psychological safety, where it's okay to experiment. There's a lot of trial and error. So how scientific it might be with data and technology, how ones and zeros, rational approaches we see, this trial and error thing is the very heart of this continuous innovation, these iterative processes that we see in agile design thinking and all these models that we can apply here. So it's quite funny that art and the creative part is so important in what a lot of people see as hardcore technology.
No, indeed. Dennis, what kind of changes do leaders experience as they go through this transformational leadership process? And I'm kind of hesitant to call it a process because I do think it's bigger than the process itself. But what are the kind of things that people start to notice that take place in their thinking and the way they engage with others that tell them that we are actually changing, we are becoming more adept and more ready for this kind of work environment?
What I think is most important is that we move away from operational view of digital as an implementation. Like you mentioned, it should become second nature. It's a cultural change more than anything else. And when I run workshops for rapid innovation, for instance, and we do like a 3-5 days session with different teams, and we come up with a solution. So we talk with the customer so that we have a real understanding what are the customer pain points. We brainstorm some solutions in multidisciplinary teams, and we come up with something. And that is also not a perfect outcome, but it is an iterative approach. In these 5 days, which I've done with large corporates, we come up with something that we can work with. It is zero budget. We don't need a complete restructuring of the business. It's just by bringing people together, and we get to something. And it's phenomenal how people are excited about it. There's a small, sort of some competitive element to it. And everybody has great fun in doing it. So it feels less threatening. And by starting small with small pilots, make it visible, work on it hands-on, you bring it to life. I think that's the best way to do change management, is to actually let people experience it firsthand. The fear of digital dissipates immediately. And the speed, like I mentioned, 5 days, people say normally it took us 3 to 5 months to even get an approval to start working on a proposal for this project internally. Yes. So the people see immediate result of what they're doing, and the role of a leader becomes more of a facilitator for this, rather than other leadership styles where the interdepartmental coordination was also a crucial element in big organizations. So yeah, altogether, I think that's where you can really, a lot of small steps make a big change. That's a really good starting point. And another one that really is effective is creating insights in data. So these dashboards that we can create, and we don't need highly technical people to create these dashboards. It's very intuitive. And then data comes to life, and managers also love it because, hey, suddenly, oh, what if we do this? What if we look at this? And it's real time, it's up to date, and they have a better visibility of what's going on in the business and make fast decisions accordingly. So that's all low-hanging fruit. There's nothing stopping you from doing that tomorrow, if you like. Yeah, it doesn't need massive restructuring exercise. And what you see is once those small islands of innovation emerge, it can act as a catalyst for change. I would say it's usually on the middle level management or even bottom up. And then you can also make your case to senior level who might not buy into digital transformation that much before, and they see these tangible outcomes, that I think then the possibilities are limitless, right? If all levels see the results for themselves.
Mm. Dennis, maybe a last point from my side. You spoke about cross-functional teams. You spoke about a digital ecosystem where we work with others outside of our organization, and very often very different teams, different age profiles, different experiences. What have you seen as the greatest impact of young people entering the workplace and bringing digital skills from outside of organizational leadership? And now they're part of these cross-functional teams. They may be leading some of them. They may be partnering with your organization as a startup or even a scale-up organization. What have you seen as their greatest contribution or role as they participate in creating transformation and leadership more broadly in organizations?
Yeah, that, of course, if you look at Gen Z or the late millennial generation, depending on the definition, which age brackets they are exactly, but let's say the new young generation, well, obviously they grew up with technology. So for them, this is the standard way of working. They are surprised if the things are within an organization are actually still in a non-digital way. So if you talk about the great resignation, I believe that one of the factors is also the lack of technical innovation, that these people really feel like, yeah, this is for them like a stone age type of working. So that for your employer branding to attract talents, it's not the main driver of digital transformation. I totally agree with that, but it definitely helps to attract and retain these talents. And when I work on fresh graduate programs, etc., for companies, then what I notice is that they have a lot of ideas, a lot of new ways of doing that I also didn't hear before. I always learn a lot from them. It's great. And a lot of enthusiasm. And the only thing I wanted to teach them is say, okay, how can you survive in a corporate organization where how can you be successful to get your initiatives heard by the established organization? That is for me the critical success factor for that generation, is to navigate in the current corporate structures, which still need extensive business cases before you can start anything, lengthy approval cycles and all that stuff. Mm. So if the organization is not, let's say, embarking this new generation in the ways I just described before, then these people will leave in 1 or 2 years out of frustration. So, yeah, they need the help to navigate in the current structures to thrive. So, both need to meet each other halfway, I would say. Yeah? So the corporates have to change and adapt to the new reality and the new workforce coming in. And the new workforce have to learn how to navigate with especially in the larger organization, how to deal with that effectively. So personal influencing is important. Even if you're in a non-leadership position, how do you influence that? How can you sell your case? That kind of things. How do you navigate the political structure in a company?
Mm, indeed. I guess this is where leaders learn from each other and as they undergo this transformation in leadership experience. Dennis, this has been a great conversation. I just want to say thank you for sharing from your experience with us and giving us a deeper glimpse into digital transformation. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're most welcome. And thank you so much for inviting me here.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.